From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If Hollywood knows anything, it knows how to tell a story. But there's one story Hollywood has a tough time with, and it's marriage. Weddings are a breeze. Romance writes itself. Lust and passion and sex. Just say the words and the audience is there. But try to take on the long, complex, nuanced drama of a marriage, and Hollywood runs. Interesting. This hour On Point, the trouble with marriage on the silver screen. You can join the conversation. What's the ratio of running around to staying put out of Hollywood? Is it 100-1? What's a Hollywood depiction of marriage that sticks with you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where the thermometer read -4 this morning, is Janine Basinger, Chair of Film Studies at Wesleyan in Connecticut and Curator of the University's Cinema Archives. Her big new book is I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage in the Movies. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Janine Basinger, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
It's great to be back, Tom. Thank you so much.
Talk about an unlikely theme for a big book on movies. You've looked a lot at women in movies, famously, and a lot more. But this is kind of the dog that didn't bark, isn't it? Marriage in Hollywood?
Yeah, it is the dog that bit me. I think it was a much more difficult topic than I had realized when I cheerfully undertook it, feeling, well, who knows more about marriage than I do? I'm 45 years married, and as I always say, to the same guy,
right, okay.
Not several guys over 45 years.
Right. Well, yeah, who would know? In Hollywood terms, that could be 8 or 9 marriages.
Exactly. But, you know, it was not easy, but it was intriguing. And the more I got into it, the more it interested me. And I think everybody else has been very interested also. It's intriguing.
You know, we asked on our Facebook site, asked our listeners who their favorite movie couples are. And by the way, for listeners who haven't been, and there is such a great conversation and lots of comments there at On Point Radio. But let me just give you a sample, Janine. Some of these sort of figure into your book and some don't. Who are great movie couples? Lynn says Donna Reed and Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life. Susie says Mary Steenburgen and Steve Martin in Parenthood. They got it right. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. We've got Katie says, that's easy. Norman and Ethel in On Golden Pond, the epitome of a lifelong relationship that encompasses the good and the bad and still endures. Brian says, Vito and Carmela Corleone in The Godfather. I love that one. And Rosalie says, the Thin Man movies. I know you write about that. William Powell and Myrna Loy, pretty wacky marriage, but they were a great couple. But, you know, we had also this theme running through it. Scott, who said, you know, I started giving this some thought, and I'm totally drawing a blank. None of my favorite movies featured married couples. What's the history here, Janine?
Well, that's exactly the issue. I mean, the first thing that you have to do when you tackle this subject is to figure out which are movies about marriage and which aren't, and which are wonderful couples that play well together, and which are wonderful couples that play married people together. And the first thing that you learn is Hollywood avoided marriage as much as it possibly could. Although marriages are all over movies everywhere, there aren't a lot of movies that address day-to-day married domesticity as a subject because, you know, it was kind of boring. I mean, marriage has no real story arc. It just plods along. And so,
Is that really true?
Yeah.
Is it just too subtle a story arc?
Well, it's a story arc that doesn't lend itself well to a 90-minute or a 100-minute drama.
Not enough chases, not enough explosions.
Well, or not enough. You have to get them. You know, it's that old get them in trouble, get them up a tree, get them down the tree format that a lot of movies followed. Whereas one of the things you do find is on television, you find more long-range, accurate or semi-accurate stories about marriage because they can go week to week to week to week. And it was an interesting thing that Hollywood liked the chase. It liked the romance. It liked the bickering. It liked the sexual excitement of will they or won't they. And it liked putting two people in conflict and then kind of resolving it and bringing to people in the audience that this too can be you. You will find romance and it will be crackling with excitement. And the great
finale. It's worth the struggle, but it's always the finale when they get together. Yeah. And then happily ever after, that's their business.
Right, exactly. And you don't have as much fun. That was the great thing about Nick and Nora Charles in the Thin Man movies is they are an eternal courtship. They're always kind of romantically bickering. There's always sexual tension and friendship and fun between them. They get dressed up in top hat and tails and silver lamé and fox furs, and they go out. You know, this is the marriage we all want. I don't know. I'm wondering why I didn't get that one. I mean, you know, why am I in my jammies, you know?
You don't wear furs at your Sioux Falls place? You better with that low thermometer.
You bet. Here I'm getting the furs out. But, you know, the thing is, those films are significantly not marriage movies. They're detective movies.
Well, take us back, because I think a lot of people may. I mean, you specialize in a lot of these black and white studio era films that is a great legacy, but not everybody's seen them. We may need to introduce. This was back, I've got a little bit here from The Thin Man. This was a series. This is from The Perfectly Lovely Marriage, I guess. And this is Dashiell Hammett's series that was made into this series of detective movies. He's a detective. She's a socialite. And it's Myrna Loy and William Powell, and remind us of the types that they represented.
Nick, I won't have you going down there.
Hey, it was you that got me into this.
Well, I know, but this is different. He's a crazy man. He might kill you.
He won't kill me. I've got acid to protect me.
All right, go ahead. Go on, see if I care. But I think it's a dirty trick to bring me all the way to New York just to make a widow of me.
You wouldn't be a widow long.
You bet I wouldn't.
And not with all your money.
Remind us of these types, Janine. What was going on?
Well, William Powell is the ultimate in the suave, sophisticated, low-key, elegant suitor. Smart, you know, funny, witty man. And she's the woman always known as the perfect wife. Excuse me. I am in cold weather. Excuse me. And she's funny. She's sophisticated. She's his equal in every possible way. And they're just a charming pair. They represent the best of what Hollywood had to offer in terms of glamour and wit and sophistication and great clothes. And, you know, that's who they were as a pair, Nick and Nora Charles.
And that went on and on. I mean, this was a couple that people fell in love with. They had this witty, wacky repartee. And how many films did they do?
They made 8 or 9 movies together over time. And in fact, they did ultimately have a child, a little boy. And they got a little more domesticated as the series went forward. But they do represent a sort of you can be married without having to really be married kind of couple, in that they have an eternal courtship, a wonderful long-range romance in which they flirt and charm and seduce one another in a lovely way.
Let's go to Jenny in Cambridge, Massachusetts, calling in on marriage and the movies, the storylines, what works, what doesn't. Jenny, thanks for calling.
I'm a published romance writer. I've published 4 books. And the convention in romance writing is you always leave them at the altar. You never go beyond. Because if you go beyond, it becomes another kind of book. It's another story. And in the examples that your guest has given, you don't see the romance that led up to The Thin Man or the other examples that she gave.
So leave him at the altar, but that's where the story ends. And Janine, that is more or less the way Hollywood's gone.
Well, yes, that's why a lot of marriage movies that were successful actually were told in flashback. They start with the couple getting a divorce, and then they remember how it was before they came to this point. So you have a way of going back and almost retelling the romance story and then coming around at the end where then they decide not to get divorced. So it's a kind of backward version of the romance novel story. But it is true that Hollywood also, like the romance novel, did feel it was time to stop when you got to the end, to the happily ever after. What came after wasn't going to be as interesting, wasn't going to provide a happy story necessarily, and was going to be the story that the audience really was living every day, so they weren't particularly interested in hearing it. And that is why when I started looking through, you know, and I did screen literally hundreds of films over a three-year period, I was surprised at how few actual marriage movies there really were.
Did Hollywood have Hollywood figures actually articulated this problem? Have they said, you know, here's the dictate from the studio chief, no marriage movies, for heaven's sake?
Well, Frank Capra himself told me, he said, one of the things you have to do in marriage, keep away from marriage in the movies, he said. Have a happy marriage in real life, Janine, but keep away from them in the movies. And Sam Briskin said, who would want to see a film like that? Yeah, no, they were smart about their audiences. They were smart about the types of stories they wanted to make. And they were always questioning what will work, what won't work.
And yet it's interesting, in the nominations for Oscars this year, we've got a French film, that is in some ways all about marriage, or at least at the end of a very long marriage in Amour. We'll look at that. Janine Basinger's new book is I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage in the Movies. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about marriage on the silver screen and Hollywood's struggle with going the distance. Janine Basinger is with us from Sioux Falls, South Dakota today. Her new book is I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage in the Movies. And it's kind of a tough road. Hollywood not so enamored of what happens after the capture. I've got a little sound here from Penny Serenade. This is 1941, sort of looking at the challenges. This was Irene Dunne. Cary Grant, fall in love, marry. She can't have children. He has trouble making ends meet. They adopt a girl. She dies, though, and the daughter, the girl, and it tears them apart. The movie opens as Irene Dunne, playing Julie, is leaving the marriage and asks their friend Applejack to take her to the station.
I'm leaving.
Julie.
Will you go down to the station and get me a ticket on the 11 o'clock and cash that check for me? Smith will do it for you. And I'd like you to drive me the train.
Julie, you'd better think this over.
I have been thinking it over, Applejack. Been thinking about it for days.
You and Roger have been married a long time.
But we don't need each other anymore. Well, that happens to two people. There's nothing left.
Of course, in the last scene, Roger, Cary Grant, catches her just before she leaves. They lament their loss. The adoption agency calls with a new perfect little boy. And off we go. There's one. Kind of that the story of trouble. Different kind of trouble, though. Up for an Academy Award right now, the French language film Amour, just out on the short list for an Oscar, tells the story of this aging Parisian couple, both music teachers, still in their way devoted. She suffers a stroke when she returns from a stay in the hospital. As he's tucking her into bed, she makes him promise never to send her back to the hospital if her condition worsens. Here she is, Anne, extracting that promise from her old beloved George.
Promets-moi une chose. Je t'en prie, ne me ramène plus jamais à l'hôpital.
Anne.
Tu me le promets?
Anne.
Ne parle pas. N'explique rien.
Do you promise me? Do you promise? Don't speak. Don't lecture. Of course, when she does worsen, he keeps his promise by suffocating her with a pillow, strewing flowers on her bed, sealing off her room, locking himself into the apartment with her. Janine, there's quite a stretch from Penny Serenade to Amour.
Yes. Well, of course, you're dealing with two different countries in their presentations, and also going from out the studio system and the days we ground them out for a mass audience to modern times. And that alone for a film historian means, you know, you're not even in the same game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that in both stories, there is the pain of marriage and the things that can happen to your partner and you that you don't anticipate, and ultimately the need for the two of you to find a way to get it together, work together, to help each other. And It's really, Amour is a beautiful, beautiful film, and the performances are really terrific. If you haven't seen it out there, audience, it is a beautiful film. But for old people like me, watching it is like, oh boy, what a downer here.
Is that where we're going?
You know, I'm sure I can count on my husband to smother me. But, you know, I mean, the thing is, it is a beautiful film, but it does address the issue of two people. Mm-hmm. Who have lived together, worked together, and who are going to go the distance for one another. It reflects what marriage is, and is that you don't let each other down. You take each other on the terms that you have to, and you would never let your mate suffer. It is a very powerful, powerful film.
I mean, there are different kinds of powerful films that come out of marriage, some drawn from literature. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? You know, you've got addiction and money and control issues. Mike Nichols, 1966, the film version here. Dark tone as Martha, played by Elizabeth Taylor, reveals her shame that her husband, of course, Richard Burton's character, George, who has a whiskey bottle in hand, never had the ambition to take over for her father as president of his university.
Daddy thought it was a good idea, too, for a while, until he watched for a couple of years and started thinking that maybe it wasn't such a good idea after all, that maybe Georgie boy didn't have the stuff, that maybe he didn't have it in him.
Stop it, Martha.
Like hell I will. You see, George didn't have much push. He wasn't particularly aggressive. In fact, he was sort of a flop. A great, big, fat flop.
Stop it, Martha.
I hope that was an empty bottle, George. You can't afford to waste good liquor. Not on your salary. Not on an associate professor's salary.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Elizabeth Taylor going to town? I mean, Janine, there is the Hollywood trope of the marriage that's blowing up.
Yeah, and the anger, the rage, the disappointment, investing in one another and finding that what you thought was there isn't there, wanting more out of the life they're living, wanting more out of each other. This really is about disappointment in marriage, about addictions that are used to block that disappointment, the rage, the expectation. I mean, this is a classic example of a disintegrating marriage, of one that will never be right, although they have found, as it turns out, their own way to play it out, to enact mm-hmm. roles and a charade that keeps them going. And that's one of the interesting things about marriage, is like there's this mystery to marriage.
Yes.
What goes on behind closed doors, one doesn't really understand what the heck is keeping these people together.
Mystery fuel. Yeah, what is that?
Yes, exactly.
Sometimes famous couples have played together on the screen in relationships, sometimes even when they're about incompatibility in many ways. Here's Woman of the Year, 1942. Famous pair in real life, Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn, paired up a lot on the screen. Both columnists in Woman of the Year. In New York, she's the classy globetrotter, emancipated woman. He the down-to-earth sports writer. She's won the Woman of the Year award, and they're headed off to the ceremony for that when Hepburn tells Tracy she's going to leave their adopted child home alone for the night.
Sam, we've got to go. Ellen's waiting. And
yeah, you go ahead. I'll stay with him till he falls asleep.
Sam, don't be idiotic. You simply don't want to come to the dinner. That's why you're putting on this paternal act.
I'm not putting on any act. We accepted a responsibility, didn't we?
But everyone will be looking for you. What shall I say you're doing?
Say I'm at home minding the baby.
Oh, Sam, for heaven's
sake. Tell him anything. I don't care what you tell him. Tell him I had something important to do.
Who would believe that you had anything that was important enough to do to what?
You know, it's too bad I'm not covering this dinner of yours tonight, because I've got an angle that would really be sensational. The outstanding woman of the year isn't a woman at all.
Oh, boy, Woman of the Year. I mean, I can see everybody wants to go out to the movies in those days to see Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, but did people want to go out and see marital discord, Janine?
Well, normally they didn't like it so much, but in this case, this is the first of the famous Hepburn-Tracy pairings, and this is the one in which they fell in love with one another, mm-hmm. allegedly. One, I suppose, doesn't really know what was going on with
right.
the two of them. But they are a famously unmarried couple off screen. The fact that they aren't married is what makes them interesting. But the chemistry between them on screen is very, very much obvious. And the film is beautifully directed by George Stevens, well written, and the two of them are great. It's a wonderful role reversal. So they manage to offset the bitterness. They manage to deflect the real issues that are on the table here, which is, what do you do in a marriage when you both have high-powered careers, mm-hmm. and you decide you're going to be domestic and even have a child? Who's going to stay home with it? Who's going to do the dishes? Who's going to run the household? But they managed to make it into a charming comedy. And that was through the genius of pairing these two people who actually fell for one another.
Yeah.
And so you feel the authentic quality of their relationship, and you invest in it and you believe it can work.
You hear 1942 loud and clear, though, when he says, you know, that ambitious woman, not a woman at all. Yeah. Let's bring our listener.
Although in the end, he does say, look, you don't have to be anything but who you are. You don't have to be my wife. You don't have to be domestic, but we have to make a pair together. We have to find a way to balance it out.
Pretty amazing chemistry, Hepburn and Tracy there. Let's go to Rachel in Somerville, Massachusetts. Rachel, you're on.
Hi. Funny, I was just going to bring up Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn from the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Yeah.
I think in general, it's a really amazing show about marriage, because also, if everyone remembers the plot, the Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn characters are parents who are surprised when their adult daughter brings home her fiancé, played by Sidney Poitier,
right.
Black man.
African-American, yes.
I think that you see their off-screen chemistry come through, but you also see, you know, they're an older couple at this, near the end of their careers, and get the impression in the film that they've been through a lot together and have a really strong relationship, but it's kind of shaken by this.
Absolutely. Surprise. But it's interesting to see them at the sort of the other end of their careers in quite a contemporary film, certainly for that time. How about that relationship, Janine?
It's a really good example of a solid, believable marriage on screen, as the caller says, because first of all, we already know off screen that these two people, Hepburn and Tracy, have themselves stayed together over decades in some way and grown old together. And this couple don't necessarily agree on the situation they're in, but they find a way to live with it together, to talk it through, to accept it, and to go forward with it. And the long speech that Tracy gives in tribute to his own marriage to Katharine Hepburn, saying, I hope if you can feel, you know, what we do, that you'll have the kind of marriage we do, is a really beautiful example of a good marriage speech on screen. Audiences liked it because they believe in Hepburn and Tracy as a couple.
Troubles in marriage, of course, troubles in anything make for Hollywood grist. Go way back, 1939, Made for Each Other. You've got James Stewart and Carol Lombard. I mean, we're back there now here, but starring as John and Jane in 1939, Made for Each Other. He's a young New York City lawyer, more or less destined to marry the daughter of the head of his law firm. Instead, he and Lombard meet one day in Boston, fall in love, and marry right away. But they're hounded by money troubles, and things start to go sour. And John, James Stewart, begins to have doubts.
Maybe I pulled a dirty trick on you when I took the cinder out of your eye up in Boston.
What do you mean?
I think maybe the whole thing's been a mistake.
What whole thing?
Our marriage.
Oh, Johnny.
I've gotten into debt. I've gotten no place at the office. I've made a household grudge out of you, just like Mother said. Jane, it just hasn't worked out.
But we haven't had any real trouble. Maybe a few silly little things that all people have to meet when they get married.
Made for Each Other, 1939, but it's all with that kind of smooth jazz in the background. Bring it up to date. This is 40, just last year, and here's a scene from just released, directed by Judd Apatow. Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann play Debbie and Pete, whose marriage is coming apart under the strain of their jobs, their children, their resentment at turning 40. Here's one of their pillow talk scenes.
I do want to kill you.
How would you do it?
I'd poison you. I poison your cupcakes. And just put, like, enough in to just slowly weaken you.
I love it.
I would enjoy our last few months together.
Me too.
Because you'd be so weak and, like, sweet, and I could take care of you, but while killing you. Have you ever thought about killing me?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Sure.
How would you do it?
Wood chipper.
A wood chipper?
Yeah.
Wood chipper. I mean, Janine, there you go from, oh, Johnny, yeah, and a few silly little, yeah, things to wood chipper.
Yeah.
Whoa.
There. I would have loved to see that character in This Is 40 go into a wood chipper. I would have been good with that, and I would have poisoned him too.
Not
I,
your favorite
I
thought, film.
No, it really wasn't. The people who made the movie are talented, and I've enjoyed other work by them. But this movie, I really did not like. And I've talked to people who are married over generations, you know, people in their 70s, yeah, 60s, 50s, 40s, 30s, even 20s. And no one has liked this portrait of marriage. Or
why?
Felt
because
it
of the film craft or because of the depiction of marriage?
I would say both. You know, the thing is, there's something strange. These people are very vain and self-focused and narcissistic and even stupid. But the way that it plays out between them, with each person so self-focused and so concerned about their own issues, is something that most people who are married kind of know. This is just not going to work. And I don't know why we were all so mortally offended by it, but no knock on the people who made the movie, who are enormously talented. But this is a movie that it came out after my book had already gone to publication. Mm-hmm. But if it hadn't, I don't know if I would have tackled it. In a way, it's ironic that there's more honesty in the presentation between Carol Lombard and Jimmy Stewart. I mean, they're saying to one another, look, things are going wrong here. He's saying, I'm not making enough money. I'm not advancing at my job. My mother's causing trouble. I don't know what the heck is happening to us here, but it doesn't seem to be working. That's a more, in a way, more honest presentation between two couples than the conversation between the others. You know, who knows?
Chad's calling from Spokane, Washington. Chad, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you like?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big movie watcher, but there was two that have stood out in my life. The first was when I was a kid, which was in the early 80s. We went to a drive-in with our parents to see, I think, Crocodile Dundee. They stayed and watched Parenthood with Steve Martin.
Yeah.
And I really liked that one. Even seeing it again in the last couple of years, I think it still seemed pertinent. And
what about it? What about the relationship did you like there? Was that Steve Martin and Mary Steenburgen?
Yeah, the honesty, you know, which is everything you guys are saying, really, is that there's nothing glamorous about a long-term relationship. It seems like it is a bit of a, you know, trudge through the mud at times. So, you know, it's just the comedy of the reality. It is. It's comedy and tragedy at the same time, it seems like. So
comedy, you know, in a very deep sense. Parenthood, back in 89, several have brought that up here online as well, Janine.
That's a really good example. And because it's so much about the children, I ended up not writing about that book, that film, but I agree. And I think that the caller really articulated that well. It's about the day to day, and it's got the comedy and the tragedy woven together seamlessly in a way that a good, an honest portrait of a marriage or an interesting marriage movie does. And I think that's a really good choice.
We've got people with all kinds of nominations here. Gary says Henry and June. Grace mm-hmm. goes back to Donald Sutherland, Julie Christie, and Don't Look Now. Ooh, that was a mover.
Yeah,
Joe,
was.
Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer in The Story of Us. DiCaprio, Winslet in Revolutionary Road says two very different endings, but both couples play a real relationship incredibly well. Janine Basinger's new book is I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage in the Movies. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about marriage on the silver screen and Hollywood's struggle with really going the distance. Janine Basinger is my guest. She's a chair of film studies at Wesleyan University. Her new book is I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage in the Movies. And it's kind of a funny record, kind of a spotty record. It's not Hollywood's favorite destination. Maybe it's obvious why, but it's also just interesting to plumb. 1973, there was The Way We Were, little bit about class differences, maybe, and more. Barbara Streisand, Robert Redford, played a couple first in love, then married and disappointed, then divorced. But he, as the easygoing upper-crust writer, didn't work well with her, the working-class political activist. He has an affair while she's carrying their child. During the fight that breaks up the marriage, she touches on the core problem, class difference. Everything comes easy to you, she says.
You really think you're easy? Compared to what? The Hundred Years' War? You're so ready to fight, you don't have time to understand anything. Counterattack, politics, revolution, cause. That's fine. It's all fine for you. So do it. Stay with it. I admire it.
Up to a point.
That's right. Up to a point.
Okay, okay. Don't belabor it. I get it. I don't fit on Beekman Place. That's what's really wrong. No demands, just fun, laughs. Go ahead. Go. Go have a good time on Beekman Place. You want to end it nicely like a gentleman you have. So go on. Go. Get out.
There we go. The way we were. Get out. And there's your marriage or the end of it. Catherine in Hanover, Massachusetts. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is a great show. My comment is, it's kind of, I was also going to bring in Gone with the Wind, where, you know, that crazy relationship between Clark Gable and Vivian Leigh. And
yes.
The thing is, it's almost...
That's your ideal marriage. You like them hot. You like them wild.
Well, no, it's almost like the actual idea of marriage mm-hmm. takes a second seat. Life and love and what's going on around them.
Yes, yes.
Even to the one that you just talked about with the way we were.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many other aspects. And it's almost like Hollywood doesn't want a marriage to succeed because there's so much other drama outside of that.
I mean, that's one way to maybe put a marriage in there. Put it in the midst, Janine, and thanks, Catherine. Put it in the midst of wild drama, the Civil War, Janine.
And it's one of the aspects that I write about, which is, you know, set the marriage inside something larger, and then it can play against a big drama, and that solves your problem that you only have a little drama in the marriage itself. Gone with the Wind is really about the Civil War and what happens to the South over those decades and how their lives have to change. But we as an audience really connect to it through the marriages, not just Rhett and Scarlett, but also Ashley and Melanie, and, you know, the kind of, you know, yearnings that go back and forth across all of them. The marriage gives us the hook to personalize the bigger drama. And I think that, you know, what the caller said is an important aspect of the marriage movie, that you need to do something with it to get drama. And one of the things to do is make a bigger story. And she was right on that.
We've got listeners suggesting Martin Landau and Ellen Bernstein in Lovely Still. You know, they're married. He's got Alzheimer's. She has to make him fall in love with her again. We've got Mari says, how about Renato and Albin in La Cage aux Folles? All right. And Michigan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Michigan.
They're a great marriage.
Yes.
I've got them.
Yeah, they've got the staying power there. Michigan says, Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner in The War of the Roses.
Yes.
Talk about... Was this a moment when Hollywood said, let's show it in its worst possible light, let it rip?
Well, it's really inevitable that the battle of the sexes is going to finally arm itself or go nuclear. I mean, you know, it goes really nuclear in Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. And The War of the Roses is a real turning point. I mean, where they absolutely destroy each other and the home they live in. It's, you sit there and watch the whole institution of marriage, the whole concept of a home, the wonderful American home, just be ripped to shreds. And it's an important movie. It's an important landmark in the history of film, War of the Roses. It's also funny and kind of horrifying, but a really good example of a modern marriage movie.
Yeah, The War of the Sexes, indeed. Donnie says calls it the ultimate anti-marriage movie, but he also votes for Lion in Winter, Peter O'Toole, Catherine Hepburn. Talk about wonderful nuance. I mean, marriage does have drama. I guess when you're kings and queens, it's magnified, but the drama of power struggles within marriage, Janine.
Well, power struggles are one of the major issues that Hollywood found to put into the script of any marriage movie. Who's going to be in control? Who's going to decide where they live, what they do? Are they going to push for money? Are they going to live a simple life? I mean, that kind of conflict and competition is built into a good marriage movie. And interestingly, even back in the 20s and into the 30s, they started making movies where both the man and the woman had major careers and the conflict that that brought to the home. And of course, in the old days, they endorsed the idea that somebody needed to be in the home, preferably the woman, doing everything. But that's an age-old issue. It's not a just a modern issue. I loved the story of Us, the person who called that in. That's a really good example of a modern marriage movie also. I wanted to say that.
Let's go to Ted in Decatur, Illinois. Ted, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
Hey, I just wanted a quick comment, because I think a counterexample to what couples being talked about was, consider for a moment the on-screen and the off-screen relationship between Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward, and I'll get offline here for listen to your comments.
Sure, okay. Sure. Ted, thanks very much. Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward, how about it, Janine? Do they make your screen?
Yes, they. I have several of the movies that they were in that are marriage movies I write about in depth. And one of the best was the film Mr. and Mrs. Bridge, in which they play an older, middle-aged Midwestern couple.
Right.
And you know, nobody played married better than these two people. They utterly understood marriage. They were together, happily married for decades, and they understood the rhythm of marriage, the nuance, the little subtleties, and they play those two things on screen brilliantly. And I have an enormous admiration for them, both individually in the films they made separately, but when they play married, nobody plays married better than they do.
I mean, that may be part of Hollywood's challenge here, is that a lot of what the drama in marriage can be very subtle. You need very skilled actors to bring this across.
Yeah, you do, and you need people who have some kind of understanding about the difference between the overt discussion or presentation of what happens between two people and the hidden or secret one that nobody's ever going to see.
Right.
And, you know, that's the mystery. There's a mystery to what a marriage is and why it works. And that's what they can – that's the challenge to the screenwriter and to the performers and the director that makes the whole subject kind of interesting.
I mean, put Mr. and Mrs. Bridge up against Mr. and Mrs. Smith, where Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie literally trying to kill one another, and you get some of the subtlety ironed right out there. I guess there's a different kind. Bruce in Berlin, Connecticut. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I thought that the 1950 version of Father of the Bride with Spencer Tracy and Joan Bennett portrayed a perfect mother and father married couple.
What about it? What about their depiction?
Well, they were dealing with it was very realistic, very believable, and they were faced with the ordeal of their daughter getting married, and of course, which is a big thing in anybody's life, and
sure.
I thought they portrayed it beautifully.
You know,
on the other hand, I thought the Thin Man characters, Myrna Loy and William Powell, actually portrayed a couple of alcoholics.
Well, you may be right. There are plenty of club scenes, plenty of martinis, but then, I mean, theirs was about kind of wacky and witticisms. On the other hand, and this is what is interesting. Thank you, Bruce. Janine, I mean, the thing about marriage that makes its absence in so many movies interesting is it's so prevalent. Despite all the divorces, marriage is right at the heart of life. I guess when you throw in a wedding, Father of the Bride, you take it into territory again that people are happy to see a marriage exercised through the window of that, what, celebratory family event full of all kinds of capacity for almost mayhem. And there's Spencer Tracy back.
Yeah, the thing about a wedding is that when a new young couple are getting married and embarking on a marriage, then all the older people who are married, the parents and everybody coming to the wedding, suddenly rethink their own marriage. I mean, anybody who's married who goes to a marriage has that. You remember when you got married, what you said, what you thought, how you felt. It's a time everybody's choking up or getting really mad out in the audience. So a movie about a wedding is always indirectly about all the marriages surrounding the couple, as well as what you think the married couple, the new young one, will turn out to be. Will this marriage work or not? Father of the Bride is a fun movie, too. It's a great comedy as well as a lovely portrait of the older marriage.
In pretty much all its incarnations. I think. Jennifer in Buffalo, New York. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I had to bring up the movie American Beauty. I really thought Annette Bening and Kevin Spacey, what I loved about the movie was that in the beginning, you could see that they fell in love because she was so exciting and they had this really interesting relationship. But then what happens? How couples just get into ruts. And then in the movie, when you see a glimpse of them having that spark again, I think she was sitting on the couch. But I just thought that was a really good example of a neat movie.
Yeah, an exploration of the sort of interior life of a guy, in this case, looking to get out of that rut, maybe her as well. American Beauty, Janine, that was compelling.
Yeah, and also it illustrates that, again, that mystery. I mean, that rhythm of a marriage where inevitably you do get bored with one another, but maybe that spark can return because it's still there somewhere. You still have something tying you together. And marriage movies don't often try to show you that, but that movie does it well.
Or even those turning moments where it goes from the initial kind of excitement to a different kind of excitement that may not be Hollywood stock and trade, but American Beauty did a lot with that. Olivia in Wakefield, Massachusetts. Olivia, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi,
Janine. I just love the topic, and I'm eager to read the book. The reason I called is because it struck me in the conversation that when you talk about marriage, you're actually really talking about a lot of different roles, because as you pointed out, the parent role is really not totally marriage. It's kind of a little bit piece of it and separate. And even living together isn't entirely necessary for marriage. If you think of marriage as that, like, lifelong commitment, the thing that, you know, was so powerful and more. And I think that as a society, we don't do a particularly good job looking at marriage and understanding marriage. We don't study it very much. There's not a body of literature out there.
We think about kids and parenting and carpooling, but not the nuance of it, maybe.
Well, just not the relationship part of it. It really is about the relationship, and that's the interesting part. And it's almost as if once we're married, we forget that it really is still about that early part before you went to the altar. It isn't all about the kids. It isn't all about living together.
Well, that early part and how it evolves. That's a great point, Olivia. Let me hold it right there and get one more. Lida in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Lida, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is a very good moment for me actually to jump in with my question for Janine, which is I come from a different parallel tradition of documentary filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some very honest and real material that has been there. I myself am a filmmaker and recently made a film called Love and Other Anxieties. And it turned the camera on myself and my marriage. And I think that what I wanted to ask Janine was, what is, you know, I was exploring what were still the taboo topics in terms of what you show on screen. And I think that one of those is ambivalence. And that's part of that interior life. And I want to ask her about her sense about the ambivalence that people can carry almost through a lifetime of a marriage.
That's a wonderful, I mean, there's the nuance. Is that beyond Hollywood's reach when looking at marriage, Janine? Do we find the limits of you know, film art here?
Oh, no. One of the great things that Hollywood could do in its golden era was present ambivalence and ambiguity. That was how it made movies for the masses. The subtexts and the underlying hints and statements that were being made. We've come out to a time where we have less of that. because people feel, I think, that marriage is a more disposable unit than it once was. In the old days, we were kind of, when you got married, it was not going to be so easy to get out of it. Mm-hmm. People don't have to marry today. They can live together. And if they marry and it isn't working, it's easier for them and more socially acceptable to ditch out. So the ambivalences were more subtly portrayed in the films that are actually about marriage in the past than they are today. But the ambivalence that exists between a couple mm-hmm. is the thing that marriage needs you to learn to live with. And that's one of the lessons that somebody who's been married 45 years finally comes to learn. And by the way, I would love to see your documentary. Documentaries are one of the most interesting aspects of the marriage movie, and I only dealt with narratives. You should send me a copy of your marriage movie.
Give your details to our producer, and we'll do that. Love and Other Anxieties. Interestingly, we've got marriage films coming out with new structures. The kids are all right. You know, it's Julianne Moore and Annette Bening. Lots of subtlety right there. And then you look to television, Friday Night Lights, and many have as well in our online comments saying, no, it's not in movies. It's in television. And this one really nails it with Tammy and Eric. How about it, Janine? Why Friday Night Lights?
I loved Friday Night Lights. I thought it was fantastic. And that marriage is my ultimate choice for the best, most honest portrait of a marriage that I've seen. And it is true that the television screen can handle it. You know, television can go on and on and on with it. Film, it's got to be a roller coaster ride to tell the story. And, you know, you can have a merry-go-round ride on TV. And Friday Night Lights has a real honest marriage.
Marriage made for TV, maybe.
Yes.
The Hollywood has come at it many, many ways. Janine Basinger writes them up very interestingly in her new book, I Do and I Don't, A History of Marriage in the Movies. Joining us today from lovely Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Janine, it's always great talking with you. Congratulations
you
on
too,
your 45
Tom.
Years. Keep that going.
Thanks.
Keep all the nuance, all the ambiguity. Thanks a lot, Janine.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for everything you bring right here every day. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.